Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah. Queen never knew. And my homie Chili Chill. Yeah, yeah.
We give it up for Platinum
Queen. We give it up for Platinum
Queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We give it up for Platinum Queen.
California. California.
Give it up for Platinum Queen.
Calypso, T-Speedy, or Scholar. Make you wanna holler, like tips from a hollow. Platinum Queen, roll call goes as follow. Miss Optimism, beautiful butterfly. Double up in the house, don't ask why. Miko and Miss Choir, songs of worship reply. Miss Computer Lady, Black Man, Abe and I. So go and testify, just call in. Platinum Queen's got the West Coast ride again. Richard and B.C. and up, Cavito Man. Got the chat room blowing up, so y'all tune in. Rolling.
We're giving up for Platinum Queen.
Who's cracking with you now? Tuned in to the most dangerous radio show on the internet, on Blog Talk, in the galaxy, in the universe. You know why? Because we tune in to what's going on in the neighborhoods, in the communities, to reach out and at least try to help with the kids, with your kids. Giving underground artists, you know what I'm saying, that don't have deals, an opportunity to be heard. Call in number 347-884-8239 every Sunday, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Ladies, we want to hear from you.
We're giving up for Platinum Queen.
Hey Shonda, hey sis, you start the show off, and we'll be right if they hear from McQueen first. What's today's topic about?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Platinum Queen Quest Show. I am your co-host, Ronan Soul 75, but it is known as Ronan. And today's conversation is going to be ethnic amnesia, pandemic that needs to be stopped. And I believe I have area code 111, a Skype call. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It is Shonda. It is I.
Good to have you, Shonda, as always.
What's up, little brother? I'm looking so forward to this show.
Yes, definitely we're looking to have a lot of fun, but actually some educational as well. And wanted to get in the middle of things, first and foremost, wanted to offer a disclaimer. And sadly, at many times it goes unnoticed. But let's try it. This broadcast may contain adult language, unedited perspectives, and freedom of expression. Listener's discretion is advised. And for the slow crowd, we're going to bring that down. When it comes to this broadcast, granted there will be some adult language at times, because there are individuals who are passionate about what they say and do. Now, it has to have some measure of direction, hopefully forward. If it goes backwards, then we can fix it. Otherwise, it's better that people honestly express themselves unedited. They feel a lot better, and most times people tend to empathize with what's being said. So anyone looking to call in for some retarded mess as far as racist and everything like that, we'll take care of that accordingly. So the call-in number is 347-482-3939. We'll get you in the queue, and we'll line you up to get into the conversation. Now, to really get it in, Shonda, when you hear the word ethnic amnesia, what comes to mind with a description for yourself?
Discretion.
Yeah. What does it mean to you?
I'm going to have to be brutally honest. Really, I'll just put it this way blatantly, just in the dark, not knowing, which we know knowledge is power, but it's amazing to me. Let me say this. I invited a majority of African-American. I did. On the blackout post, and it was just amazing to me how many still want to stay in the dark. No unity, do not want togetherness. And to see modern-day slavery and to act like y'all don't see what y'all see is unbelievable to me. And I heard so many black people, and I'm telling them about the show. This is going to be educational. Tune in and check. It ain't going to make no difference. So what is it going to change? I said that problem right there. Right there. There was a sister. Shout out to, her name was Ebony. Shout out to Essence. Had posted this video for Unity. Blackout saying what it caused, we need to come together. And I find out later it was African Americans who turned her in. So now you have the FBI on Facebook. When we do Unity and shows like this, they're watching people post to see what you're posting because they don't want this to happen. They want us to stay in the dark and stay asleep also. And, Rona, let me say this. I'm glad you did the disclaimer, but I want to ask you, brother, if you knew this. Because Max Parthi, shout out to him, he'll be calling in, waking me to a lot of companies reported using prison slave labor. Okay? Do y'all understand what y'all represent and what y'all buy each time you go in these stores? You're promoting modern-day slavery. And the companies are McDonald's, Burger King, New York Hotel, Country Solid Waste Management, No Fear Clothing Line, Merrill Lynch, Chevron, Bank of America, AT&T, just to name a few. And the trade stock, Wall Street, they base trade their stock on black men in prison. That's how they decide their stocks, by prisoners. And more companies are representing and buying into modern-day slavery. So the more black men in prison, the more money they make. And that really ticked me off, pissed me off to no end, because I'm like, wow, I bought from, you know, those companies well, too. So to even ask out for a blackout Monday and not represent it, go in stores, it was just, I was shocked at how many people was, I have to shop. And tomorrow's Labor Day, and I got to go. Why you can't get what you need today? So that's what we just saw in the dark. So when you say that, you know, it's just time for us to wake up. And it's frustrating, and it angers me. But, you know, what can you say?
Say a lot. I can say a whole lot.
Well, you can't shake them and say, wake your crazy. I want to sometimes, but I mean, I do want to shake them by the ears and snap out of it.
Okay. Well, I want to start things off with a quote, And it says 99% of the failures come from people who have the habit of making excuses. And that is from G. Carver, Washington. And pretty much explains this show and a lot of other ones. I mean, the situations that go on. And before we get into it, I wanted to give a shout out to the He Said, She Said radio show that is on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for those who look to find it, is rmconair.com. And the number is 323-965-1600. Now, the He Said, She Said show. The internet radio show hosted by King Gerald and Sean Jones. No relations, no relationship. And the premise of the He Said, She Said show is to discuss and tackle issues with dating, sex, marriage, love, relationships in today's modern society. So it gives an opportunity to everyone to present their views and opinions and everything. They host the Entrepreneur of the Week, Song of the Week, and Keeping Up with the Joneses with entertainment. So definitely check them out. Very informative shows, pretty cool atmosphere. Speaking of our guest success is here. He is from the East Coast himself, but I'll let him explain a little bit further. He's a poet and many great things and a valued member of the Platinum Queens West family. Max, are you here on the show?
Peace, family. This is Max Parthas. I'm calling in from Columbia, South Carolina, right here where they're flying the Confederate flag over the Capitol every day.
Wow. It was a pleasure to have you here, sir.
I got to come in right, you know what I mean? So other people understand where I'm coming from physically as well as mentally. You know, my wife and I travel across the country trying to enlighten people on the circumstances of modern-day slavery as abolitionists, using our art, our poetry, and just, you know, creating unity. But it is difficult sometimes getting people to understand, especially after so many generations of bamboozlement, where we literally have been fooled into believing something that was not true, and they did it right in our faces all along. It's hard to explain 2.4 million people missing, you know? And that's how many people we have in prison today, which is the largest prison population in the history of the world.
Wow. Well, it's definitely a pleasure to have you here. And
thank you.
Just as we explained, we hope you understand the nature of this broadcast. So I hope that you're clear on this. So you have to
Ethnic amnesia.
What does that definition sound like to you, in your perspective?
Well, it looks like somebody put a couple of words together to make a description of something, which I would translate as in forgetting who you are and where you came from and what happened to those who came before. Am I wrong? Or is it no wrong?
No. That's pretty... Both you and Shana have been on point with it.
Yeah.
Now, as far as with the explaining to people what an abolitionist is and the necessity of it today.
Well, just to carry on with the ethnic amnesia, that's one of the two problems that I find in these several decades of activism that our people in particular face, is we lack a historical perspective and we lack a worldview. It's always kind of in the here and now type thing, you know, so we don't have those perspectives to build on. And if you had them, people would understand more clearly about modern-day slavery. I originally became an abolitionist, about 2004, when I heard Angela Davis make a call for 21st century abolitionists, and she explained clearly how the prison industrial complex was using the 13th Amendment exception clause as a loophole to exploit our people the same way that they have always done. So for years I went into research mode, looking about it, finding out, and the more I learned, the more convinced I became. Until now, I am beyond a shadow of a doubt convinced. And 1865, for instance, the Emancipation Proclamation was given by Lincoln, and the 13th Amendment, which he championed, was put into the U.S. Constitution. But what people don't know and didn't even realize then is that it does not abolish slavery. Although your history books say that was when slavery was abolished, first, the Emancipation Proclamation only applied to the southern states that were in rebellion against the North. The North got to keep their slaves for quite some time after that. Secondly, the 13th Amendment had an exception clause, which basically says slavery shall be abolished in the United States of America and all its territory. That's the good part. Here comes the sneaky part, except for prisoners duly convicted. So they had this plan in play to transfer from chattel slavery to prison leasing, and they did exactly that, using things like black codes and Jim Crow laws. And, you know, the prison leasing system was huge. It built America literally through the railroads and the mining companies and the plantations that they leased these men right back out and women right back out to where they were originally owned. They were doing it for like $15 per person for each job. It was crazy. And then later on, we maintained about a 240,000 prison population in the United States, which was primarily African Americans, and prison leasing went on until, like, I believe in the 60s in Mississippi it ended. But nonetheless, when we got to the 70s, Nixon started that war on drugs. Now, the war on drugs wasn't about drugs, because there wasn't that many drug addicts in America. It was really about black people, and he said it, and you can hear it in his tapes, the Nixon tapes recently released, where he said, basically, we have to find a way to blame it on the blacks without appearing to do so. And his way was the war on drugs. And that escalated the number of people being incarcerated using the exception clause again. And that went on until Reagan came in. And Reagan was like the devil himself as far as I'm concerned. I think I'm going to hell for voting for him. And I admit it, I did it, you know. But he brought in the first private prison, CCA. And what that allowed them to do was to transfer the ownership of people back again from government to independent companies and corporations via people. So since Reagan did that, the prison population went up like 1,600% from 240,000 in my lifetime to 2.4 million, what we see right now today. And many of these private prison profiteers are huge global conglomerates. The number two in the country right now is the GEO Group, and they also manage the facilities in Israel for the Palestinians. They also manage facilities in Haiti, and they also manage facilities in Australia. And the people that go into these prisons are like the guarantee for the stock that they sell on the open market. They have contracts right here in America for 25 years in states like Arizona, where they guarantee that those prisons will have a 100% occupancy rate for 25 years. How the hell are you going to guarantee something like that when the crime rate has reduced by 25%, but you're guaranteeing a full prison? Well, the way they do that is they use human trafficking. They take prisoners from one state and they send them to another to fill those beds. It's all about filling beds for them. And if you don't fill the beds with bodies, the prisons can sue the state for what they call a low crime tax and make you pay for it anyway.
Wow. That's a lot of information to digest.
I know, and it's a complete twist of what the narrative we've always believed was.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, these things that are not, you know, gossip or hearsay or opinions, what I'm stating is facts. You know, we right now face a situation where one in six black men can expect to spend time in prison before they're 25 years old. And in the next few years, if those trends keep continuing, it will be one in three. That's outrageous. 60% of the prison population is provided by 13% of the national population. So we only make up 13% of the population, and we have for like 200 years, which is weird in itself. But at the same time, we make up 60% of the prison population. And you can go to states like Rhode Island, where there's only 3% black people in the entire state, but there's 30% in the prisons.
Hmm. Wow. I believe you have a caller, area code 424-653. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Turn your TV up. Hello?
This is Kim calling from Englewood.
Please.
Kim, how are you doing?
Good, and yourself?
Doing well. How are you feeling today?
I'm a little sore, but I'm I'm getting better.
Okay. Well, I mean, good to have you here on the show. We've been looking for you.
Sorry,
what are
I'm
your
just
thoughts
now
on
calling in. I didn't realize
well,
it was this late.
Well, no, no problem. CP time happened. Wanted to get your... Were you able to catch what was being said earlier before you called?
No, I just now called in and heard what was... I didn't get all of it.
Okay, well, here's a question. Here's a question for you before we go back into it. What is your personal definition? What comes to your mind when you hear the words ethnic amnesia?
Ethnic amnesia? That people don't know who they are. Our people don't know who they are, or whatever ethnic you're speaking of doesn't know who they are, and they tend to forget, or they try to forget.
For example.
Huh?
You have an example?
An example? What would be a good example of that? Basically, I would just say someone who doesn't really acknowledge their culture or who they are.
Max, since you're on the air, I had a question for you right now.
Sure.
What's the Kaaba Kablasian?
Kablasian?
Yeah, Kaaba Kablasian.
I actually used that in a poem called Not Who You Want Me to Be, where I go, no, it is not all good. Malcolm warned you, and you still let your children enemies raise your kids. Now you're upset because they have Stockholm syndrome and white denial issues just like you did. And what the hell is a Kablasian, a.k.a. Tiger Woods? No, it is not all good. So anyway, Kablasian is Tiger Woods. He created that. He didn't want to just be black, so he wanted to accept all of the things that it makes up him as a person. So rather than be a part of the black culture, he decided to create this word called Kablasian. And there's other names like that, like Blasian, which is black and Asian, and Blackicans, I believe, is black Mexicans. You know, there's names like that throughout the place. And that's where that came from. There's a lot more behind that story as well.
It's hilariously sad, but it's reality.
It's expected. It's expected. I understand that as a multiracial myself growing up in a revolution. I was born in 64. My first memory was Martin Luther King getting killed. That's like my first memory. And I'm in another one apparently right now. So I understand where they're coming from. During those times, the Black Power movement didn't want half-breeds. So those people got separated from the culture. They were disowned, literally, a lot of them at that time. And they were also put in the positions where they would have to hate half of who they were, you know, and it wasn't their responsibility how they became born or, you know, whatever happened to them. So in the 90s, at one point, they started a movement to be recognized as a separate race altogether, and it was a bill that was put into Congress before Congress called the Tiger Woods Bill. And the biggest opponent of that bill was the NAACP, who said that if we lose all of these people from the black community, we would reduce our power and economic power and political power greatly. Because at that time, there were several million. I believe now there's like 30 million. But that's what happened. You know, I talk about that in my lifetime sometimes. I deal with that on a regular basis, you know, where people hate me because of who I am, not what I've done.
Explain that further. When it came to when they say mixed, when really it's a different shade, you know, just like pink and purple or, you know, red and blue, it's still a color, but, you know, how do you explain it in your experience?
Well, I really have a poem that explains it in detail. It takes about 3 minutes if you prefer that. If not, I could try to put it together in just a few moments of explanation. It's your choice.
Yeah, I would really like that. I would enjoy that because that also I want to tell the listeners to check out www.maximumimpactpoetry.com as well. Yes, Max, please, feel free.
Well, I've had my black card pulled so much in my life, it must be a New York City turnstile pass. I got people telling me to mark other and saying I'm not a brother because I refuse to partake in self-hate to become a member of the local yokel kill whitey club. They say the subject is suspect because of a Sicilian side. Like, I didn't survive a genocide for years. Like, my family didn't walk the trail of tears. Like, my children aren't subject to a double dose of diaspora. See, I know a lot more about me than you might believe. And through mitochondrial DNA, I can literally trace my lineage back to Eve. And I know the name of family members from as far back as 1693, and you're trying to tell me what I'm not. That is hot. So I just play this guessing game and ask how many people who are listening right now know their own grandfather's name. It's a damn shame. Part, half, hybrid, mutt. What the? Listen, it's a fact that I'm a black cat, and I know some would prefer that I subtract that, but if you can't grasp that, then just call me prismatic. And don't get it twisted. It's in the dictionary. I'm one of those living bridges that cross lifelines, and we lay lines called ley lines, where there's friction and distinction, where energy emanates. I'm part of something, all right. I'm part of the struggle, surrounded by half-wits calling their own children mutts from the White House steps. And the only hybrids I see, to be honest, is fathered by a racist state and white nationalists who have put you into bondage. So, if we're dividing the world by race, I want at least 3/5 of the ball. No, wait, hold on. Right here now, I'm going to say I want it all. Step slowly away from the planet and put the continent down. That's all mine now, and you can't have any of it unless my father says so. I'm pulling your place card for a change. Now what? A bunch of hateful hypocrites talking about what's theirs like they split Pangeas, filled seas, carved continents, moved mountains around like they were planting trees in a park, and then they set the sun in the sky spinning because they're afraid of the damn dark. Most of y'all fronting fools use the same damn EBT card that everybody else does, and a bunch of y'all just lost that. Publicly talking crap online about who made a baby with who, with no concern for the baby at all, like he ain't gonna grow up one day like I did, son, and look at the tapes and know how many fake, created, Willie Lynch indoctrinated, broke power brokers hated them just for drawing breath on day one. It's outrageous. We don't have any identity confusion. You do, when this shit is contagious. So, stop cherry-picking people for your private clubs, and stop feeding propaganda to your baby cubs. Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was as white as I am, and he defined black power. If Malcolm X and Frederick Douglass had said instead, forget you hateful, ungrateful bastards, like they was friends with the MLK version of Boondocks version of MLK, you'd probably be living in the CCA under the CCSA right now today. That's the Corrections Corporation of America in the Confederate States of America. So have a little appreciation for your ancestors. I'm just saying, if black America were on the Maury Povich show and the test came back to show positive for us half-breeds, the first thing out their mouth would be, hell no, that baby don't even look like me. Somebody ought to call Child Protection Services on your asses. I mean, look at poor, confused Don Lemon. And what the hell is a Cabalasian, a.k.a. Tiger Woods? No, it is not all good. Malcolm warned you, and you still let your enemies raise your kids and educate your kids. And now you're upset because they have Stockholm Syndrome and white denial issues just like you did. Try telling your children you love them for a change and see how far that moves. And then we could be like, one nation under a groove.
Hey. Snapping, clapping. I love it. I love that. Love that.
Well, thank you.
Well, see, this is why we prefer to keep things unedited, because we're not limited to a jump shot or twerk videos or something like that. We have artists, scientists, mathematicians, everything. Everyone has their different canvas which they put out their art. And definitely we got to go into that a little further. But we have a caller from area code 412-853. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Peace. Hi. My name is Essence House. I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you for inviting me and welcoming me to the group.
Thank you, Essence. I'm so glad you called in.
Yeah.
Essence. So I heard the end of what the one brother was saying, and it was very powerful, his perception, you know, on people having little melanin dominance over others. That doesn't define a person having power, because as he said, people of all colors, no matter how light or dark they are, no matter how dark or life they are can have an impact.
Most definitely. Now, seeing that you're here, what comes to your mind when you hear Ethnic Amnesia, your description?
Can you repeat that, please?
I say, in your mind as a woman, what comes to your, how you describe, in your own words, ethnic amnesia from what you see?
I see people of color, no matter what religion they are. Not religion. Pardon me. I'm just transferring. I need to turn the music down. Okay, I have your full attention. Just give me one moment, and please continue to talk. I have to handle something important. I do apologize.
Not a problem. Now,
you know
Max.
What? Can I say this? I want to ask Max a question, yeah. too. Because for the people who just tuning in and listening, Max had gave me this link. And I said it before the show, and I'm not sure if Kim and other listeners got a chance to check it out. I sent you guys a link. And when I tell you on the companies that reported using prison slave labor.
Yes.
Blew
yes,
my mind.
Huge list. Including Walmart, McDonald's, Burger King, places
yes.
like that, Starbucks. 37 states in 2013 passed legislation that allows prisons to use private industry to, as its labor force, or rather allows private industry and private corporations to use prison as its labor force. As a matter of fact, they have commercials out right now from the prisons portrayed towards the international corporate industries to come to prisons and use their labor force. They say things in this commercial like our employees are always on time. They don't have babysitting problems. They don't get days off. They're always willing to work. I mean, of course they are. They're in prison. And they even say something, I believe the woman says, we're bringing an industry back to this country that fits perfectly. Now, the industry they're talking about is slavery. And it's a commercial online right now. You could see it on TV in some places.
Please hear this. Please hear this and understand. So how can we continue to support? That's like we're keeping our own people bondage in slavery when you support and buy. Now, see,
yeah.
When I watched the video, it did. It really blew my because I felt, wow, I supported each one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
Still, the point wasn't recently, but I've done it and
we
had no
have.
Idea. Had
yep,
no
we
idea.
All have. There's simple things that you can do. One of the simplest things you can do is if you have like a 401k or retirement plan, check out where your retirement and your 401k is invested in, because a lot of investments go directly into private prisons. It's one of these big businesses that, you know, investors want to tap into. So we found that the teachers union, for instance, has nearly $100 million of their retirement funds invested in the construction of private prisons. That really is a conflict of interest that is unacceptable. The same thing applies to sheriffs. The same thing applies to police chiefs and legislators like congressmen and senators. They also have investments in prisons, and that is also a conflict of interest. The two things that I'm trying to get people to do the most is the first thing, is we have to recognize the problem. A lot of the things we address are symptoms. Brutality, police brutality is a symptom. Mass incarceration is a symptom. injustice in the courts is a system. Institutionalized racism is a symptom. And they're a symptom of one thing, and that one thing is slavery, where people are being bought and sold, and there's slave catchers out there hunting you and bringing you to them for an income. So we have to first recognize the problem. That's really hard in today's society. For some reason, they just don't want to get it. It's like it's something that would be so painful, such a betrayal so high that they would rather deny it than fight it. So we have to do that first. And then the second thing is to become an abolitionist. And it's not something you got to fill out a form for. It's simply deciding that this is wrong and you would like to see it ended. So whatever point you can play to do that, you're going to do, even if it's as simple as waking the guy next to you up or the girl next to you up to what's going on.
Max, what about black-on-black crime?
I call black-on-black crime a myth. It doesn't exist. I mean, if you it's what it is a narrative created by racist media, as they have always done, to make us hate ourselves and look at ourselves as the problem. But to be truthful, if you start comparing all of the racial, unracial violences, you'll see that white America leads the way in all aspects. But we don't talk about white-on-white crime. You can go in and kill 99 people, and a media problem ain't one. But if you in Chicago, it's black-on-black crime. That's a black community. Who do you think they're going to kill? Who do you think they're going to mug? Who do you think they're going to rob? Do you think they're going to look for the one white guy in the neighborhood? No. Whoever is there is getting it. And that's how it works in every community. So I look at this black-on-black crime narrative as another propaganda tool used by the media in order to make us look at ourselves and our children as criminals.
Hmm. So you're saying that it is predicated by proximity and propaganda to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever talk about Hawaiian violence? I mean, nobody ever talks about that, and there is a lot of violence in Hawaii. You know what I mean? It's really just a propaganda tool. The bigger of those, if you really wanted to compare them, would be white on white. But we don't even mention that. It's like it's in nobody's vocabulary.
Interesting. Kim, your thoughts?
Is Kim still
Kimberly.
I'm here, and it's not Kimberly, it's just Kim. I'm here, but I had you guys on mute because I'm at a family gathering, and it's a little noisy. So when I need to respond, I have to go into another area.
I'll take
listening.
It even further, too.
I'm listening to everything.
Just a little bit further. If you put people in a circumstances where poverty exists, you're going to create crime. It's really just that simple. People will do whatever they need to do to survive. So a lot of these places where we talk about black-on-black crime is really poverty-ridden. And places like Chicago, for instance, you can see that a lot of that poverty is created poverty or inherited poverty. For instance, we found that the Chicago Police Department and the DEA were working together with the Sinaloa crime family out of Mexico to import 80% of the drugs into Chicago. So all of the deaths and crimes that's going on there, really, you could put that literally on the shoulders of our own government. Because if they hadn't allowed these drugs to come in, these things wouldn't occur.
Wow.
Ashe. So I want to tell you, but my opinion is on people of ethnic color. This is Essence House speaking, and I'm available now. When I picture that, I see people of color of all different types. I don't see receptive people. I see melanin dominant. When I hear ethnic, it can be a person who respects their culture, their heritage, and their nationality, to answer your question.
Okay. Well, I want to ask a question for each and every one of you. Go one by one. I take a little time with this. Now, I'm going to start with Shonda or anything. The first question is, what is the importance of knowing your history and controlling your dollars, your schools, your businesses, banks, security, transportation, media?
Well, first of all, the banks, they're not for us. The monetary system is fraudulent. Okay, we have to be realistic. We have to consider that times have changed, but paper is not valuable. I'm interested in gold personally. The banks are in our favor. You know, they're always in statistics. They're denying us for loans, for certain things that they make available for other people to have social mobility. The media, they constantly have been putting out lies and reports about the incidents that's going on with the city of Ferguson, St. Louis. They're not being correct. They're brainwashing, they're whitewashing. Hollywood is always putting in a movie of melanin dominant and more in comedic history and turning our history into something evil, saying that it is something that it wasn't. And they use it, you know, like they have Lucy, and then they have the Eye, and then they have all these different movies that have, like, maybe an image of Africans or Egyptians or, you know, people in Nubia, but then they have this total white spin. So it's this type of magic that they use to influence people, and it works. My little sister is 11, and she watches Disney because she's underneath my grandmother, and she's constantly watching someone on TV who is white, has straight hair, who's a witch, who's casting spells, and who's always, like, you know, putting pranks on people. I don't watch TV. I don't like the media. That's why I have a very strong point to have my own publication company, to have my own media. We need our own Facebook. We can't put the plan. We can't, you know, we can't have more than Native Americans and Africans in the White House at the Oval Office making a strategy of how we're going to overcome the government and how we're going to overthrow oppression and put it on Facebook. They're a step ahead
That's
of us.
True.
The CIA
is,
yes, the CIA is Facebook. So when we're messaging and when we're getting all excited putting all this stuff on Facebook, they watch it all. So my goal is to create, is to help be a vessel. I don't want to be the owner. I want to be the vessel that facilitates and organizes. I want to be, you know, that record keeper, that person who protects the lost scrolls, because a lot of people are being blocked, and a lot of people's messages are getting deleted on Facebook, and I feel like we need our own cell phones, our own laptops, our own cell phone carriers, our own social medias. We cannot use this. Quantum theory was invented in Nigeria, and the first cell phone and computer was invented by a black person, a black man. So therefore, we have the smarts, we have the energy to create our own, because we have to get off Facebook, period. We have to create our own email system, because eventually my plan is to, you know, convert the email messaging to our own email. In a process, I'm looking for graphic designers, computer coders, computer engineers, computer programmers, people who have these expertise who aren't sellouts, who's not going to be an agent in the movement, who's not going to sell out for some paper money that's going to burn away, and you're going to sell out your whole future generation and ears over this now present thing when a whole generation in the future could be damned for it. So
and let me say this.
I'm focused on.
And let me say this. Is that what made me wanted to connect with you as well as Max? And Max, let me share this with you. Who all don't know and listening to this, I like where Max going, what he speak, how he give back and help our people as well as Essence. The time that I connected with these two people, I have got emails from the police. Someone let me know my name because I talked to Max. I let Ronan know. I've sent it before. It's a cop who let me know he's watching everything. Yep. Everything I do. When in Max, do you know who he is? I don't respond because I so agree with you, Essence. But see, that lets me know that we're doing the right thing. But you're right. There's certain things we gotta watch what we post, because this whole blackout thing, that's what they're upset about. He told me to fall back. A cop told me I better fall back. You understand me?
Who
told
Shonda.
Me? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yes.
Shonda, this is Kim.
Yes.
Essence is really speaking my language. You know, that's exactly what I have been telling you. And that's why, you know, she has the good idea. We do need our own stuff. But until we get that, that's some things I tell you I want to take off the air, and I want us to try to find some type of a
we have
location.
To.
Yeah. So
because that's what made me
right
Essence,
on that.
Yeah, get off Facebook, because she told people, stop putting your information, text me, your email, your number. So that's what I did. That's why I asked her to call in, because
and
they was watching us on Facebook. And Max, they started deleting. Go ahead, Kim.
Shonda, that's why sometimes I'll check with you or I'll call you direct and say, hey, how can I post this? You know, private message or what? Because I know they are watching. And I saw one of the posts
Absolutely.
That you posted about the young lady who had did a video on the blackout.
Right.
And somebody reported it as spam or something, or
yeah,
nudity or something like that, and it wasn't even that. So, yeah, we need to take it.
We'll
off
definitely
the air,
talk about it off the
get
air.
Together and find some meeting places and do some things like that. I told you I was checking on one place to see if we could have several locations where everybody, you know, can have access to local meetings. But we need
Yeah,
that.
Because whenever I post Max things, it get deleted.
Mm-hmm.
So this police was hitting me. Now he up to 3 times a week hitting me.
Well,
he don't appreciate the.
Is this a melanated individual? This police officer?
No, well, he's a LAPD.
Okay.
He's a LAPD. Well, so he's
Shonda,
watching my page.
Let me tell you, something has happened to my account also. I discovered it when I was on the airplane trying to reach out to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on their Wi-Fi, it wouldn't let me go to Facebook because it came back with a message that said it was a false address. And when I looked at the address, I couldn't see all of it, but it had an M in front of it with a dot. Then it said Facebook.com. And so every time
yeah,
I would try to go.
Yeah, we got to stop posting on Facebook. We really do. Anything that promotes unity and black, you have to be careful.
Facebook allowed me to get in touch with people and to see different perceptions and have information. So Facebook and social media is good for the movement because certain things that the news is lying about or hadn't, we can inform each other about and communicate. So Facebook has been a good thing. Now it's just a time to transfer everything that we have put on Facebook. There's been times where I wrote whole notes or essays on Facebook and they have been erased. But because I am in touch with my ancestors, I remembered every word. So we have to start transferring those images, those comments, those notes off of Facebook. We have to start recording things the old-fashioned way on notebooks and different mm-hmm. things like that in our own computers, in our own file systems. The next
and
thing
that's what you think. What do you
shut down our computer. They've already done that to my mentor. It shut down his computer.
What is your opinion?
Well, I've been under scrutiny now for over 20 years, every way you can imagine. Every day that I get up and leave my house, there's a burnt husk right across the street from me to remind me of what could have happened to me. So when I get on social media, I act like I have a built-in audience of alphabet boys because often I'm talking to them. You know, I want to affect their minds just as well as I'm affecting my own people's minds because they need to understand they're human. They're people just like us, and most of them are making the same petty change we're making. But they're getting a pat on the head and master, and so they help slavery continue on as is, you know, or they don't understand the situation that they're in. So I have no fear about what I say on Facebook, but I do keep my mind about me. I won't tell people to go out and commit violence. I don't give them my base plans, like whatever it is we really plan to do. Those things we meet up in person, and, you know, we'll have abolitionist meetings about what we can do to make changes, you know, in small
Absolutely.
Groups across the country where we're face-to-face, and we record that for prosperity because in the future there's another generation that's going to want to know how we got out of this because
exactly.
this repeats over and over. So that's how we do it. We meet in person. I don't even have a cell phone. I haven't had a cell phone in 6 years, and I can give you 99 reasons why I don't have a cell phone. But personally, let's just say I don't want people listening to every single thing I say and knowing everywhere I'm going at all times.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's freedom.
Well, that's why I don't have a TV, Max, and I haven't had one in about 12 years.
See?
Because I don't want anybody watching me every time I walk out the living room.
Yes. You were saying?
I was saying that I learned what happened with the city of Ferguson through Facebook because I don't watch TV. So oftentimes
right.
I have to hear from people what's going on the news because I don't care to watch TV or the news because it's just a diversion and it's a distraction and that energy can be put elsewhere.
Once you start noticing that, you can put a few minutes into watching the news, not for the purpose of learning anything, but to understand what your enemies are doing and the propaganda they're putting out so you can go and counter that propaganda because it's a constant propaganda war. They're literally brainwashing people, and a lot of our own people in particular are receiving this. So you can watch periodically just to find out what they're doing. But people, people like us as news sources, and I try to stay, you know, in a position where I give out legitimate, good, factual news. Sometimes I get screwed up, but I know people depend on others like them to get their news from because we're just being used by the media, literally. They're just going ahead and telling us anything they want to tell us and expecting us to believe it. Like this recent incident where a brother in Charleston, North Carolina, or Charleston, South Carolina down here, was shot in the head, and he was only 19 years old, shot in the head by the cops, and they're putting out a story now that he committed suicide by forcing the cop to shoot him in the head.
Ridiculous.
What?
Yeah, that's the narrative that you get from the news.
Well, Max, I believe that the TV is what brainwashes everybody, and if you're not mature enough to handle the television, you shouldn't be watching it. That's my take on it. But also, along with the story you just told, there was another story I had told last week to Shonda and them about the young man who was arrested because they arrested him because they said that he damaged police officer uniform or something like that because they had beat him up so bad that he bled and the blood got splattered on their clothes, so they arrested him for that. It
they
was
charged
an arrest
with destruction of property for bleeding all
exactly.
over their stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. In Ferguson.
You know, so stupid
that
stuff like that.
Yeah,
we're
long before.
Okay, I'm sorry for interrupting.
I was saying, it's just like, you know, everyone is chiming in here and putting some real solid information out there because that did happen, I say, years or it happened way before this Ferguson situation happened. So this ain't the first time that they let
right.
this mindset be known, you know, where they stand. I mean, this, you know, I was raised in Indiana and Indianapolis. We can't go into Martinville at sundown. While they still have sundown towns and everything like that, then, yeah, there's a definite problem, you know, going out here. And then we have individuals like this, what's her name, this Clearmount or whatever, who was leading this charge in Ferguson, you know, saying we won't back down. In support of the cop. And I've seen a few other videos where, you know, a bunch of handkerchief heads were out here showing up and showing out. And it's really disturbing. And that's part of the reason why I don't watch television en masse. Now, I have to watch and see what's going on out here. But when I see certain things, there's a level of sickness out here when you have people trying to be something that they're not. I mean, I've even had and I told Sean in this story that I had a guy who was, I mean, real dark skinned, and he tried to really give me a PowerPoint presentation as to how I should be with white women. I should drop black women all together, every shade, everything. And he's telling me reasons. And all his reasons were insufficient. I was like, okay, I can do all those things you've been mentioning, sexually, financially, and overall with my own. Well, what's your point? I said, no, they'll give you money, they'll treat you like a king, you know, they'll spoil you and everything like that. And I was like, okay, why can't you do that with your own? And every woman that he dealt with, she was like bottom feeder type. I mean, it's like she was like most were built like a Taylor Swift and about as smart. And the others, they were like they were planetary size, I'll say. And, you know, they had this very unhygienical smell about them. But, again, that's a whole nother conversation. But I just don't understand the necessity of trying to adhere to the so-called standards, and not just beauty, but overall, people who cannot even stand you being in their store, buying their goods, being in their presence, period. I don't understand it. And I was hoping somebody
indoctrination and assimilation.
Well, you know what, Ronan, one of my things is I try very, very hard. I do a good job at recycling my black dollars, but there's something else that needs to happen, is that we as a culture need to learn how to serve our people. And I'm not going to patronize any company, I don't care what color it is, if I'm not treated the way I should be treated, meaning that I should be treated with respect. And if I'm spending my money, I expect to get what I'm spending my money for. I don't expect to be treated rudely when I come into your place of business. I expect to be treated professionally as I'm treating you professionally. And there are sometimes, you know, every place, almost, I do really good at finding black businesses and supporting them. So so, because my thing is I have a lot of friends that are entrepreneurs. I go to my friends first for services, and I go, hey, can you provide this for me, or do you have this? I go to them first to get whatever products I need or services I need. I only go outside my culture if my culture doesn't provide the services I need. But there are several occasions where I try very hard to patronize my people on several occasions, and I made it very well known that if I come into your coffee shop and you got a problem with serving me coffee, that's fine. I'll just go right down the street to McDonald's and get coffee, hot coffee without the lip. And let me say this, both companies, because the McDonald's I went to was black-owned, but I try to patronize a person who's trying to establish themselves, and I do favor people who are just starting out. When you're just starting your business out and you're trying to get off the ground, I'll be there 100% supporting you. I'll tell all my friends to come to you. I'll help you build your clientele up. But also, I don't want to send all my people to you and you're being rude to everybody. You can't do business like that. So I left one black company to go to another black company, which is McDonald's. I went to a private coffee shop, and they were, you know, I tried them several times, very rude and unwarranted. So I just started going back to McDonald's to get my coffee, but both places were black owned. So I said all that to say is that we need to learn how to do business also.
Well, I have a question for the listening, and especially the ones on the air. And definitely just call in and chime in. The number is 347-884-239. Anytime, you know, you want to hit the queue, press 1, and we'll put you in. Now, the question I have for everyone, and you can take your time answering this, and I want you to be unedited and honest as possible. It's a two-part question. How valuable is your family name right now? And if so, what gives it value?
I could begin. Essence Powell speaking.
Truly.
I just stepped aside from my family reunion. I had to buck and weave out of there because everyone wanted to have a small convo before I left to speak with everyone. And in Pittsburgh, the houses are known for being very dominant, very prominent as black and Moorish activists. We have some political power here because some of our family members are politicians. And a lot of us individually are successful. However, house is a slave name. The houses, like we have a big group on Facebook, they're all over the East Coast. We're all connected, even the ones down south. But, you know, I'm starting to care less for my last name only because it's a German slave name. And, yes, it has helped me in life. But, you know, since last year I stopped telling people when I first meet them in person that my name is Essence House, because in this city when I say that, they ask me a million questions, like, is this your cousin? Is this your uncle? Is this your dad? Who's your mom? And I see that people really don't. People try to get to my loved ones through me, and they assume, because I'm 22, that I'm gullible and that they can get close to me to get to one of my family members. But yet they don't know, inside my family isn't tight. What it appears to be, there's a lot of jealousy, there's a lot of arrogance, there's a lot of false ego, and, you know, I really didn't even want to come to the family reunion, you know, just because of that facade of bouginess. I'm not too fond of it. I just came because I wanted to respect my elders, and I wanted to, you know, support and help out, but, I am starting to, you know, I don't know what name I would choose. I haven't gone through that journey. It's my father's last name, and, you know, I was raised, and my legal name is Muhammad Bey, because I grew up, you know, a Moorish, but House is my father's last name, so I take it on. However, I feel that it's something that needs to be abolished if I'm going to totally be free.
Max, same question. What value, how valuable is your family name right now? And if so, what is it value?
Well, first of all, that's not my family name, the name that's on my birth certificate. It's like most people who have come here without a history behind us from enslavement or from being ripped from our tribes and having our families murdered in front of wives and children. Those are the names of the colonizers, which we carry on. Just like the money that we fight amongst each other with, our pictures are not on that money. And our names are not Smith and Jones and McKinney and all of those different weird names. That's not our name. So how valuable is that to me? Hell, I don't even know the guy that I never met the guy whose name I carry. Never met him. He wasn't my father. He was my mother's ex-husband. So that name means nothing to me. My name is Maximus Parthas, and it carries a lot of weight. As far as my family's character is extremely valuable. We are some smart, insightful, bullheaded people, and the more of us there are, the better. I'm a father of six. I've raised 10, and I just had my 9th grandchild. The world better watch out because there's a whole lot like me. That's how valuable we are.
Shonda. How about Kim?
Is Shonda there? Is Shonda there?
No, we'll wait on her for a second. Now, I'll come back to her with that question.
You want me to speak? And you want to go with me?
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, let me start this off by saying I've been working for the government for over 30 years, and I discovered halfway through my career I was hired straight out of high school before I had even graduated. They hired me to work for Los Angeles County. And I found out that one of the reasons why I was possibly picked to work, you know, I had talent and skills. Of course, I passed all the tests that I had to take. But also, in choosing, I was told that one of the methods for choosing employees was based on the person's last name. And it wasn't until probably partway of my career I did notice that there are a lot of people of my culture that had a specific last name that happened to be French, which my last name is French. So on my I'm saying all that to say is that my family heritage and my family name is valuable to my family because of my great-grandfather. And the name has been passed down and carried throughout the men in our generation. And the mothers in the family who married and carried their husband's last name, for some strange reason, I started noticing that there were two last names in our family. One of them was Muhammad, for all those who decided to change their name to Muhammad. And then the rest of them decided to change their name to my grandfather's name. And one of my cousins is an attorney, and he said that once he changed his name to my great-grandfather's name, his business improved. So that's my history for the names in our family. A lot of the children in our family has been named after the great-grandfathers and the fathers and, you know, and so on and so forth. With the exception of me, I carry the generation name, but my first and middle name was not given by anyone in the family, but the rest of my family members, male and female, were. And that's all I have to say about my family history and the name. But I'm curious to know what you guys' thoughts are on names and how we get employed based on our names.
Well, personally, that is a factor. There is a lot of profiling when it comes to that. And knowing my last name is, when I look back, it is a German one, but common. That's why it's better to develop and support your own. That way you know if you have, you take care of your own interests, you take care of your own education, your media, you know, your own economics, you can do and be who exactly who you're supposed to be and have no shame in it. I've traveled to different places and I've seen other cultures have their own identity and they maintained it, whether it's through architecture, whether it's through a lot of their traditions, their history, they sustain it. It's just things like we are, we're either dumb to the fact by either intentionally or not being given the initiative to remember where we came from. We have a legion of names that have created things, like mathematics is a language that we created as people long ago. You know, you have a lot of inventions and a lot of pioneers that have made a difference in this country and other places. And most of us are dumb to the fact, too. It's a damn shame. But when it goes back to employment, you know, and when we have our own, we don't have to go through all that nonsense. You can have somebody who has many of these colorful names we tend to have without any problem. You know, outside of the background check. When you see your own, you know, hiring your own, this unemployment mess and a lot of the crime will continue to, you know, dwindle. Because contrary to popular belief, crime, black-on-black crime, is not really high. It's really down. It's about, I want to say 67 or lower, higher percent lower than advertised. If Harvey was here today, he would tell you, you know, he's a native of Chicago, and knowing, you know, I've lived there for like 6 years, you know, there's a special brand of racism out there. It's not really as wild as many people think it is. You know, saying that we're out there just turning it to Chirac, which I don't agree with. But, if we sit there and take care of our own, especially, you know, people talk about Black Wall Street, you know, everything, it's possible. But it has to be a communal mindset to promote, you know, growth on that level. That way we don't have to worry about our last names or our first names, more or less, being a hindrance. That's how I personally believe in that. Although,
everybody feels
exactly.
Up to it. And see, that's one of the reasons why I brought that up is because there's thousands of reasons why we should have our own. I just brought that up just to name a few, is that one of the reasons we should have our own is because they discriminate against us based on our name.
I wouldn't mind sharing a story, if possible, about names.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, about 2 weeks ago, on our walkabout during Black August, were in Newport, Rhode Island, in a cemetery by the name of God's Little Acres. It's the oldest free and enslaved African cemetery in America. And while we were there, they were having a reenactment of a march that the people did, the African Americans did there during the 1800s that ended up at the cemetery, and they were rededicating the cemetery. So there was a large group of people there of about 30 or 40, and my wife and I showed up, and one woman was talking to the man who was giving I guess he was telling them what the place is all about and stuff like that. And she asked about the Cuffy name. She says, I'm looking for more information on the Cuffys. I found one of the abolitionists' graves right over here, and it happened to be a Cuffy, and I'm a Cuffy, and I'd like to find out more about that. Well, my wife is a Cuffy, you know? And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, you're a Cuffy? Well, my wife is a Cuffy. And then the guy told us that it's not Cuffy. It actually goes back to a name by the name of Coney. But nonetheless, in that moment, 2 weeks ago, my wife met a family member that she didn't even know existed and found out that one of her direct descendants or ancestors was an abolitionist. So the names, for me, is not as important as the people, but the names are beautiful. And my wife also is of the Shinnecock Nation, and she can trace her name back to the early 1600s, 1630s, 1640.
Well, I wanted to ask
Ronan, can I ask you a question real quick?
You sure can. I got an answer.
How many callers do you have online?
Right now I have, including myself, there are five. Actually, six of them.
Do you know what the max is? Because I'm talking to Shonda by text because she's saying that she's getting a message that's saying live listeners that could overload the system or something like that, and that's why we can't hear her.
That's prone to happen. We're definitely going to expand that because there's quite it tends to happen quite a bit when people want to chime in and everything. We'll fix
Hello?
That ASAP.
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Look, let me
Welcome
say
back.
This. Don't y'all stop talking. Do not stop talking because I know what they're doing. This is educational. It is needed. And I'm telling you, if they kick me off, I'm okay. And three times, y'all kiss my ass. Don't stop talking. I'm not playing. Do not stop talking. Do not. I'm okay. They can mess with my line. It happens all the time. It lets me know what it is. It's a lot of listeners. And what they're trying to get me to do is even go further. They want to sponsor. I don't do sponsorship. I've said this before from white sponsors and company, and I will never. I won't do that. And that's what they want me to do. This is why this is happening. I understand the game. It's okay. This is a good show.
Yeah.
It's educational. So, please, they're going to cut me off anyway. I'm used to it. It's okay.
Yes, they will try you. They will try to put things in your way so you can settle. So when you get, you know, their grant, you have to follow their rules. But in the fine print, it's telling you basically you can't empower your own. So we can't take that because that's basically selling out, and too many people do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's
a whole other show.
Yes.
In itself, honestly. We can really have to go on that.
Does Shonda have your contact information?
No, my contact information, my phone number is 312.
No. Don't do it over the air.
Okay.
However you got in contact with Shonda off the air, just make sure that you touch bases with her and give her your information. Give
okay.
her your contact information so that we can keep in touch with you off the air.
Okay.
And Max, you do the same also. And any of the other listeners, make sure you provide Shonda with your contact information where we can contact you offline.
Okay. Will do. I would like to add something to the conversation as it was going. I just heard early in the beginning of this interview when I was talking about my own issues dealing with multiracial circumstances. It kind of bothers me when I start hearing about, you know, how we're going to shut everybody out from economically. Because, like, for instance, I know a young woman who is blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white woman who has two black children, and she's a business owner. So we should shut her out? I mean, she's part of our community. She has children that are black. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of people like that with this multiculturalism going on. So it's kind of hard to pick and choose who is black and who is not. I mean, is there some kind of definition that people carry around and look at and go, well, you're black, you know? So that kind of bothers me. And it bothers me because the money, as I said earlier, that we're trading back and forth doesn't have our pictures on it. So the thing that we're really fighting over is still keeping us in bondage. You know,
exactly.
It's one of the reasons why we can't get ahead, because they control the finances. As long as we're using their toys, we got to play their game.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to play with the toys, you got to play to win. You can't play
mm-hmm.
just to keep up. So, well, you got people who are content with arguing semantics. There are people losing their homes, livelihood, and their lives due to excuses and inactivity. As you can see, we have a lot of people. Who are content with tap dancing around things, being afraid of offending other people, but what is offensive about knowing your history, about being honest with yourselves, being true to
right.
your own, taking care of your own? I mean, how is it offensive when you have a mother and a father taking care of their kids, disciplining them,
Amen.
You know, teaching them the genuine education outside the halls of miseducation that take place within 7 to 3 o'clock, or 3:15, all on a regular basis? There's nothing wrong with that. They should know where they came from. They should know their history. They should know the significance of why they're here. And on the parents, parents should be able to leave something for the children to have a solid start versus being in the negative when they go. It shouldn't be a wild scramble to figure out who's going to put, you know, mama or daddy in a coffee can to save money because they don't have money to bury them or anything like that. It should never have that conversation. You know, when it comes to the what we had personally when I was young, the family reunion was always the Super Bowl for me as a kid because we got to meet the new members of the family and see how extensive, you know, that family is and it was a tradition to grow, you know, and see like, okay, I got more of my people. I can go here and there, and you start to worry about your history. Nowadays, it's starting to dwindle because you have a lot of impromptu families being made by people who had unplanned pregnancies, but then they couldn't afford to go to Planned Parenthood. So there's a lot of things that are scaring the hell. Well, I'm just going to say it. There's a lot of things that we're talking about right now that are literally scaring the shit out of certain people because there are people who are making money off your ignorance and your confusion. You got people going back and forth doing the light skin, dark skin nonsense. Where it doesn't matter what shade you are, you're getting beaten black and blue, period. Whereas physically, economically, psychologically, every turn, it don't matter. Now, when you have two or more of us with like minds walking together and talking together without any self-destructive behavior, now that makes people nervous because the more people to put their heads together and see what's going on and then get on the same team, they know that we'll stand up and win in dominating fashion outside of sports. But that's just me.
Well, I hear where you're coming from. I can't say I agree with all your points, but I definitely hear where you're coming from.
Hey, this is the place where we sit there and talk about things. We can't. I don't know about everybody else, but I feel very uncomfortable with a foreign hand up my ass trying to talk.
Amen.
I have an issue with that. So I'm not saying I'm the know-it-all of of everything out here. I ask questions, just as everybody
right
here. And that's what we're encouraged to do.
The things that I saw, that I heard you say that I might disagree with was, one, you know, it is right that we try to leave something behind for our families. But I've watched generations of my own families have their wealth and their property ripped from them and their children and their family members killed and destroyed and entire communities happened like that. And it's like somebody hit a reset button that went back two spaces before the beginning. And that has happened to us generationally over and over again. When we make it, suddenly the rug is pulled out from over us and we have to start all over again, fresh and new, but we lose everything along the way. So those are things that happen to us, which we often have no control over. I just lost my house in Columbia, South Carolina, behind a contract sale where some white woman decided I was worthy of being ripped off and that my house was sold from underneath me. There was nothing I could do at that point. I was literally just too stupid or missed something that was going on with the contract, but she got over on me. And I'm one of many who that has happened to. So that's the first thing. So we can leave something behind, but it's not as easy as we'd like to believe because there are factors preventing us from garnering wealth that lasts. The other thing is when it comes to the Planned Parenthood, I understand also back in the days when Roe versus Wade was first passed during the Nixon administration, one of the things that's on his secret tapes is where he wanted to use the Roe versus Wade decision as a genocide in order to kill black children or half-black children, as he put it, the half-breed bastards is what he literally said. That was his purpose. And since then, we've had like 17 million that we've lost. In New York City in 2012, there were more black children aborted than were born. So those things right there kind of weigh heavily on me because I do know a little bit about the history of them, and they're easy to look up and find out where these things came from. You know, yeah. African Americans wasn't fighting for abortions in 72 as hard as everybody else was. Nixon wanted us dead.
Wow. I got a caller from the area code 661-748. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, it's Joe Neckbone joining the conversation. I wanted to add a small point. Yeah, I don't think it's about folks not understanding or going to Planned Parenthood. I think what happened is they have sold us this dream of individualism, and we have bought into it completely and full. So what is that?
Yeah, I can barely hear you just then.
Yeah, so we bought into this dream of individualism, which actually runs counter to everything that is a part of our African heritage. Africans did not think of themselves as individuals, but as part of a tribe, and then as part of a series of tribes stretching back over generations. But we bought into the me, mine, and myself thing heavily, 100%. So when people have children, you know, I mean, listen to, and I don't want to put sisters on blast, but listen to how sisters talk about children. My kids, these are my kids, not our kids, not our in the sense of our, the immediate family, our as part of a larger community, but mine. So we're looking at kids as possessions instead of citizens of a larger construct. So, I mean, once you correct that way of thinking, I think a lot of ills may not go away, but we'll be on the path to having them go away.
Amen to that.
Thank you for everyone giving me knowledge and bestowing the time. This is Essence, and I hope you all have a great evening, and please invite me to the next meeting.
Here's what I here's another question I have for everybody, because I always like to ask questions, not just of myself, but to other people. Now that you mentioned it, Joe, I want to say to everybody, if you have a degree or degrees and money, yet no thriving community or those represented and dominated by your own kind, are you still successful?
Well, I'll answer that. Yeah, to a degree, yes, but you got to understand something, all right? And this is something I've had personal experience with, because I'm one of, you know, those folks that came through Wall Street, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. When you talk about money, there is no your own kind. There's only one kind, which is green, all right? So that racial identity is lost somewhere along the riches ladder. So don't believe for a minute that somebody that has a black face that is in a world of finance, that is doing exceptionally well in that, has your best interest at heart. They don't.
I agree with that on not only the financial level, but also on the justice level. Just because it's a black cop don't mean he look at you as a brother.
Yeah.
Or a sister.
Okay. Sean, you still there? Looking at this thing. Go ahead. Let's see. Kim, are you still there?
Hello?
Yes, Kim. Welcome back.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, I didn't even know I was on.
You on now?
I was telling Shana to tell you to put me back in. Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I've got a lot going on over here right now.
I don't know, understood. But I had a question for you that, you know, looking for you to answer. If you have a degree or degrees and money, yet no thriving community represented nor dominated by your own kind, are you still successful?
Okay, you said, I can barely hear you. You said if you have a degree or degrees, and what else did you say?
And money, but your community, a thriving community that is not represented nor dominated by your own kind, are you still successful?
I don't think so, no.
And why is that?
Because for me personally, I feel like you need to give back to your community and help your community. And, you know, I always say it starts first with home. And once you help your family and your home and then your community, then I would assume you're successful. But if your community and your family is not successful, I don't consider you successful. What are you successful at? Anybody can make money and get degrees. I know some people who got 20 degrees. It doesn't make them successful.
Okay.
Well, I got a question behind that. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, the question is, what is your community? All right, because, you know, I live for years in Harlem. Yeah, the question is, what is your community? Because I live for years in Harlem. Yeah, I live for years in Harlem. Harlem is mostly white now. So what is my community?
I saw that last week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to honestly say that it's shocking to me when I do go back to my community and it doesn't look the same anymore. And the community that I live in now doesn't look the same anymore.
Right.
And it's very shocking because it makes me say and wonder what is going on and what has happened and what can I do to help this situation.
Well, what situation is that, though? I mean, you have to define what you're saying. When you say
for
situation.
Instance, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
Sometimes in certain communities, when a community changes, it changes due to economics.
Right.
Everything in the community becomes too expensive for our culture to live there. So they're kind of forced to go live somewhere else that's a little cheaper and less undesirable. I don't know. It's a lot to explain. It's just what I visually notice because I don't watch TV. I watch life. And I see life happening every day, and I see it going on every day. And sometimes I feel helpless. Honestly, I feel helpless, and I try to figure out, okay, what can I do to help? Because there are times where I step out, and I try to help, and then I'm pushed back. And that's why I'm on this radio today, is to unify with everyone, try to get some help and some assistance in trying to resolve our issues. Our community issues. Because, I mean, I could go out and do things all by myself, and I may touch 1,000 people, only affect one, and that's good enough for me because it lets me know that at least I'm doing something. There are times I mentioned before in some of the other radio shows that I've wanted to give up on several occasions because of different things I was faced with within my own people. And, you know, sometimes trying to educate my own people on the things that they need to take care of and be responsible for and the actions they need to take. And, you know, like in my community, for instance, how I noticed it changed with employment at some of the fast food chains where I see a lot of children, teenagers, high school teenagers. When I was 12 years old, I was working. I was going to school and working for an insurance company. I had gotten a work permit to work. And ever since then, I've always held probably two jobs. And no job has ever been beneath me. I've been an entrepreneur. I've ran my own company, my own business, and I've also worked for the government, which I still work for now. And then when I talk to the younger generations, and including some of my own family members, and they need money to take care of themselves and support themselves at an early age or to assist them in going to school, further their education, or whatever it is they need to maybe pay their rent or what have you, you know, I'll suggest starting out or getting any job that they can get just to bring in income rather than to go down the county. And I get this look like, I'm not going to work at McDonald's or I'm not going to work at Jack in the Box or Taco Bell. Are you crazy? And I go, well, what's wrong with working there? So I'm saying all this to say is how I see my community change. I see it change because it used to be our community working in our community stores and fast food restaurants, and now you don't see any of that. And that's how it starts. That's where – hello?
Yeah. I'm still listening.
Oh, I don't know what that beep was. It sounded like I got kicked off again. I don't know you know, like now when I go to McDonald's, I don't see myself there. When I go to Jack in the Box, I don't see myself there. You know, any place I go to, Mervyn's and Ross or wherever, Target, I rarely see myself there. And it's because, you know, I've been told that we don't want those jobs, and now, you know, we need those jobs, and those jobs are not offered to us. But we turned them down, and that's when I reach out to these kids and say, you cannot not want to work these jobs because you're giving them away. What do you expect when you go and you only see, you don't see your culture, but your culture don't want to participate? Then we only have ourselves to blame. And so it starts like that, where we start rejecting and not wanting to do things, and then we complain about it later when it was offered to us in the beginning and we turned it down. And then when somebody else or another culture takes it and say, okay, well, they don't want the job, I'll take the job. And then we're looking like, well, why do they have all the jobs and we don't? Well, that's kind of hard, how it starts. And so that's where I try to educate, you know, my people, my own family members, my neighbors, my neighbor's children, and my friend's kids, and everybody, you know. And I go, it don't have to be a permanent thing, but it's just to get you started, to get you some experience, some work experience. And sometimes, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. And that's how I start to see my community change. You know, I don't see us anymore. And if you're not making any income, eventually you're not going to be able to survive. And, you know, rent rates are constantly going up, especially in the city that I live in, which is Inglewood, because there's no rent control. So when you have no rent control, which is a whole other topic for another radio show, when you have no rent control and your rent is constantly being raised every single year, but your paycheck isn't being increased, you're not getting a salary or annual increase, you got to move. You got to leave. So it's a lot of factors that cause our community to change that I don't think some people don't pay attention to. And I try to make my people conscious of what they're not paying attention to, because sometimes they're so busy watching TV and what's going on TV that, you know, it's a lot of stuff going over their head. And they're not seeing the change. And like I said, I don't watch TV. I watch life. So I see the change immediately right away. And then later you start to see it on TV maybe 5 years later. And it's like, I saw that coming.
Max.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about abolitionist radio. Can you break it down for us, what's going on with the radio show?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because with all these conversations, I did come with a solution that we could all use and work on to solve most of our problems, and that is abolition. I do a radio show called New Abolitionist Radio every Wednesday from 8 to 9:30 p.m. on an independently black-owned radio format called blacktalkradionetwork.com, and it's owned and operated out of North Carolina by Scotty Reed, who is an incredible person doing a lot for his community, his people, and his family. And we talk about nothing but modern-day slavery and human trafficking. We show how it's all connected. We talk about current events with the police and the courts and the judges, and we keep ourselves informed and up to date on what's going on, as well as our listeners. For instance, you know, we were the ones that brought out a lot of the stories about the prisons now using prisoners for slave labor. Now, we know in this country right here, our communities were changed drastically when our manufacturing jobs were taken from the United States and shipped out to places like Mexico and Asia and Indonesia and anywhere where they could get slave labor from. You know, that's what they went for. Well, now those jobs are coming back again, but they're not coming back to people here on the streets. You know, it's hard to get a job at McDonald's, but if you're in prison, you can get a job. They will work you in prison, and they're working for McDonald's. They're working for Burger King. They're working for Starbucks. They have contracts with Walmart. They have contracts with any kind of company you can imagine. Prisoners even make missiles for the military, at least the components to missiles for the military. And these are high-paying jobs that they get from 11 cents an hour to $1.41 an hour, if they get anything. So we talk about those things, and we bring them to light, and we consistently show people the connection through the 13th Amendment loophole with the exception clause and how these prison profiteers are using that to exploit slavery, literally exploiting slavery. And I'll repeat, there's only 13% of the population providing 60% of the prison population. You know, things start adding up when you point in the right direction. Everything will click. So I'm looking for our people to come together on abolitionism, on slavery abolitionism, just like Frederick Douglass fought, because slavery was never abolished in 1865, and the facts prove it. All you have to do is look. So once we open our minds to that concept and we get past cognitive dissonance and doublethink and start feeling like, start understanding, yeah, the guy's got a point there. This is symptoms of slavery, and let's look at it closer. When you start doing that, then we can come together and fight that, just like we fought it in the 1800s. And we have to prepare ourselves for the future, prepare our kids for the future, because it's not going to stop with it. This fight is going to happen every 150, every 300 years or so. You know, slavery just don't disappear because you want it to. It comes back when it can. So that's what we do every week, and we feel like it is our responsibility to educate the populace on the truth.
So
I have a question about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick question. Do you consider that slavery or indentured servitude? Because there's a big difference between the two.
I consider it slavery because they hunt or kill kids, our mothers and fathers, in the street. Some of them don't make it to the plantation. And then they take them to the prisons, and just for storing them in the prisons, men are worth $30,000 to $50,000 a year per man. Women are worth from $60,000 to $80,000 a year per woman, and children are worth from $80,000 to $120,000 a year per child to the prison. So they get that money right there from the taxpayers. That's a $50 billion budget. And then while they're in there, I believe the percentage now is close to 1 million people's labor is exploited. So now you're not only putting them in bondage, you're forcing them to do work. So that right there is the same slavery that our forebears had to fight against. And they sell these people, or they call it beds. They sell it on the open market where people in Japan and China and Europe can invest in private prisons. So the more people that are in prisons, the more money they will get back in their dividends.
So it sounds like there's two things going on here. We got to try to prevent our people from going to prison or being put in prison. And then the second thing, are you suggesting that we not patronize these companies? And if that's so, how would we go about finding out who these actual list of companies are? How do we research this?
Well, let's skip past them and go directly to the 13th Amendment. I'll give you six things that you can do, all right? First is remove all slavery allowance language from the federal and state constitutions. We've examined all of the state constitutions now. We're up to the the ends. And we found that nearly all of them have inserted slavery language into their constitutions, even states that were free states that didn't have slavery. They put that in there to allow them to exploit the prison option through the exception clause. So remove that from federal and state constitutions immediately. The second thing is abolish all private prisons from the USA. Prison should not be profitable. When you create prisons for profit, you create a demand for prisoners. We shouldn't allow that, and we wouldn't be the only country who has banned private prisons from the United States. The next thing after that is we need to release all people being held in prisons for nonviolent drug-related charges. That 60% of the prison population is there behind nonviolent drug-related charges. Entire community destroyed because somebody had $20 of cocaine, or they were an addict, or they had some weed. Those people need to be freed. They have no reason for being in there other than being exploited. The next thing is to exonerate all prisoners framed by crooked cops and courts. Now, we have a lot of judges and DAs and cops that we know are corrupt because they're in prison. And if they're in prison, we should have a team of people looking through every arrest they ever made to find out who isn't supposed to be in prison and get them people out. Some of them are living moment by moment, and we're out here trying to figure out what's going on. The next thing is replace incarceration with addiction treatment for addicts suffering from a disease. If you're suffering from a disease, you shouldn't have to become a prisoner for that and be exploited. You should get treatment, and there's more than enough money for that. And finally, restore voting rights to the disenfranchised. Every year, the 680,000 people coming out of these prisons who cannot vote. And as we've said over and over again, a large majority of them are the African-American community. So we have to restore their voting rights so they can have some political power in this country. And then what we do when we're finished with that is take those many, many hundreds of billions of dollars saved and invested in rebuilding communities devastated by the ongoing war against people of color, minorities, and the poor, and build schools and not prisons. People might not like it, but it's definitely a plan. But we first have to start with abolitionism. We got to get rid of these prison profiteers. We can't exist with them in the same country because they want slavery. We don't.
Right.
It's hard to not put two and two together and say, well, why is all this police brutality happening? Why are they hunting us in the streets? As I just put up a video with a district attorney talking to an arresting cop and chiding him for not killing a black man, telling him how he should have killed a black man. This is how these people think more often than not. So to think that there's no connection between the brutality and prison for profit is kind of ludicrous. It makes perfect sense. When you got slavery, you get slave catchers. When you get slave catchers, some people don't make it to the plantation alive.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. Shouldn't there be another component that involves education so that you can keep a lot of these brothers from becoming the low-hanging fruit?
Well, yes. Over time, there's a lot of things that can be added, not just education, but also health care and maybe even talk about, you know, some kind of new political structures that doesn't depend on what we have today, which really wasn't made for us. You know, we keep having to get amendments to get the same rights that everybody else has. We're still 3/5 human in certain places. So, yes, those things can't come over time. But the first thing is we have to shut down slavery. I mean, I hear people talking about reparations, for instance, and that's kind of putting the cart before the horse. If slavery still exists and you're trying to get reparations, then that means that everything they do after that is free.
Yeah, but the whole premise behind Stop and Frisk, which is the bastard stepchild of the Broken Windows program, is based on, you know, catching people, you know, that are becoming the low-hanging fruit, catching people for minor crimes. So, you know, by catching people for minor crimes, the idea is you're also catching them for major ones, because people that do big crimes also do little ones too. So what I'm saying is, you know, I would think that you would need to put first, more than anything else, a program in place that keeps brothers from committing these little minor crimes that they think are inconsequential, but build a record for them that allow the police to find them and go after them, right?
Well, I remember the black codes, and I remember what they did to black people with the black codes. They made it illegal, basically, to be black. And I'll give you some laws that are working in effect right now today that are perfect examples of that being duplicated. In North Carolina, there are laws, I believe in Asheville, North Carolina, there's a law where if you're showing 4 or more inches of your underwear, you're subject to a $500 fine or 6 months in jail. Now, how can we criminalize fashion? I mean, literally, that's what they're doing. Now, who wears their pants like that? You know? So we can educate our children, and I do that to my own and to the others that I talk with in the youth detention facilities and at the schools. I educate them on the things to watch out for, but there's always going to be these laws put into place that criminalize us, and it's really hard to avoid them all. Just about anybody in this country who is black probably can get stopped, and they can find some kind of warrant on you or some kind of something that they need, they got you for, whether it be a ticket from 10 years ago, like Abiodun Oyewole's son just went through in Harlem, New York, about 2 weeks ago, or it could be fees that you haven't paid. So there's always something they can get us for. We need to educate our children.
The number one and main one they get you for is mistaken identity. Don't leave that one out. They always get you for that one.
I agree with you.
If they can't find nothing on you, they're going to find out that it's a mistaken identity case. So you look like, and you fit the description of somebody they're looking for, so they have a right to arrest you.
Yes.
But
yes,
a lot of times
we
make arrests, you know, based off ignorance of the law, too. And so, you know, a lot of people don't understand when a policeman is asking you, you know, to consent to a search, because he may not say, can I search you? He may say something else. And so they, you know, oh, yeah, okay, go ahead. And they give away their rights. So what I'm saying basically is, if you want to stop the machine, you have to stop it both at the end, at the beginning, and at the end. You can't just stop it after effect. You have to put some preventative measures in place, too.
Yeah, I agree with you to a large extent, as I said, but I also want to impress that they're always going to create more things that are illegal that we in particular do. You know, like the marijuana laws, for instance, right now in Colorado and Washington, it's legal to smoke marijuana, but there's still people in jail for marijuana.
Yeah, and I agree with you, you know, but again, you have to minimize feeding the machine. And this is the part that a lot of people do not want to discuss. You have to eliminate or minimize the raw material of the machine, and then you could starve it out. But you're never going to starve it out as long as you're feeding it raw material.
Yes, you're right. And I think the biggest problem we're going to face is holding people accountable for what has been done and is being done. You know, there are people who know fully well that slavery exists in high places. For instance, the head of the Bureau of Prisons in the United States is a black man. Eric Holder is a black man. These guys are professionals. They know exactly what's going on. They know where this money is going. They know how many people are being arrested. They know how much the prisons are making. They help write the budgets. So, you know, holding people like that accountable is going to be needed.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Did he drop?
No, I believe he's still on. I think he got muted and not by my hands. But
he got cut off.
Blame it on me. I told you, they got my phone stabbed all the time around here, man. Just blame it on me. It's all my fault.
No, Max, the thing is, like, when you have constructive conversations, when you have unedited truth spoken, and we didn't have a slew of cuss words today, but the fact that, you know, you got people who are looking to be aware, that proves to be a problem, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want people to know that it's not going to stop. It's going to keep going. So we applaud your efforts and everything, but honestly, the conversation is necessary, and it will be had whether it's one way or another. So continue as you were saying.
Well, with that being said, I'd also like to point out that there are people, like you said, who are out here fighting these fights and exposing these truths at great risk. So don't let those people disappear. You know, don't believe the hype, because in history, history repeats itself, and we saw what happened with the Black Panther Party. They divided us. They put some of us on one side who, you know, wanted peace, and they wanted to work within the law, and they wanted to use the system to the best of their abilities, and they were right to a large degree. And then on the other side, you had people who felt like violent retribution was in order and defense was in order and that there was a war going on against them, and they were fighting in it like that. And those people were killed. They were put into prisons for 30 and 40 and 50 years, like Herman Wallace, for instance, as political prisoners. They disappeared. Some of them had to escape to places like Cuba, as, you know, our sister, Assata Shakur, did. So keep your eye on those people. Don't let them just disappear. They're fighting for you. You know what I mean? If something happens to someone you know who's out there, like myself, don't just stand by and let it happen, because they expect you to do that.
Oh, even worse about the Panthers is they took their 10-point program and turned it into a federal government social program. You know that?
Yes, they copied the Black Panthers programs for a lot of our social programs. WIC is one example.
School breakfast program, you know, all of that. That's, the Panthers originated that.
Now, you guys have to be careful. I mean, you guys are borderline speaking aggressively and having hate speech, so we can't have that.
Yes, don't agitate. No outside agitators.
No, most definitely. I wanted to ask you a real personal question, Max, since, you know, we have you here. And how did you know that poetry was your calling?
Oh, my God. If you'd have asked me when I was a teenager what I was going to be, alive wasn't even in that list. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think I'd make it to 18. I was one of the worst of the worst. I was a gangbanger. I wasn't just a gangbanger. I was the leader of the gangbangers. And I was a very violent person. I was a very ignorant person. I was just bad news. And then one day I did something that I will regret for the rest of my life, and I woke the hell up after that. And I changed my life and dedicated it to helping others and being the change I wanted to see in my society.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, like, there are a lot of people who have a bad habit of not only judging books by cover, but at the same time, they're unable to read themselves. So seeing that, you know, you were able to look at yourself, face yourself, what was the most challenging part of that before you started becoming who you are today?
Oh, well, I'll finish off the other question and then I'll go on to this one. The other question about poetry, you know, as I said, I didn't know I would become a poet. It happened in the late 90s. I was into hip-hop. I watched hip-hop be born. My family, literally my kids, were the first rap family in the history of hip-hop music, very popular in the New York, New Jersey area, and doing tours and stuff like that. And then one day I got turned on to spoken word. I had always loved stuff like Signifying Monkey. It was one of my first exposures to spoken word from Wild Man Steve. I don't know if you've ever heard Signifying Monkey and the Titanic. I fell in love with that. And then I started meeting poets, spoken word poets like Amiri Baraka and Last Poets, and they really showed me how it was so much easier to just say what you want to say without worrying about music and make you become the lyrics. So that's when I became a poet. I had no idea I would ever be that way, but it happened. I let life lead the way. And the next question, I guess you said, was what's the most difficult thing when I realized what I was about? I had to do what is called tabula rasa. I had to become a blank slate, and that was the most difficult thing. I had to come to the conclusion that everything I had ever known and had ever lived was a lie and start from scratch. Literally, like, I mean, maybe the way I walk was wrong. Like, people shouldn't be walking like this. They should walk another way. I had to question everything, and I spent the rest of my life questioning those things and making foundations. So the hardest part was starting from scratch, giving up everything I'd ever known and taking for granted.
Max.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of the book called The Four Agreements?
The Four Agreements?
Mm-hmm. By Don Miguel Ruiz?
No, I can't say that I have.
Because I read that book, and that's exactly what he tells you to do, what you said you had to do. Very interesting book. He basically
talks about a lot of
things
that I do like that just come naturally. Like,
yeah.
Once you wake up, you start following a path that others follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he basically talks about how we've been programmed by our teachers, our parents, and, you know, different people of authority, and how we have to deprogram ourselves to go back to what we were supposed to be originally.
Right, right. You know, and we try to stay within these rules that are created for us, but an oppressed people following rules doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? That's what the rules are there for, to oppress you. So if you're following the rules, you're actually going along with the plan. It's good to break the rules sometimes, just as Martin Luther King told us, you know, and understand the circumstances that you live in reality, not how you want it to be or how you think it should be, but what you currently face, and not just as an individual, but as a people.
Wow.
Ronan.
Now, yes.
Since we're almost out of time, I have a caller that wanted me to give a shout out to them. Would that be okay?
Sure thing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm giving a shout out to Bishop Gaines, and he is from the Harvest Time Apostolic Church, located at 122 South Broadway Street. And his service times are Sunday mornings from 11:30 a.m. and Tuesdays 12 noon Bible study, and Wednesday Bible study at 7:30 p.m. So he's asking anyone who would wish to come out, they're more than welcome. He's extending an invitation to anyone who wants to come out.
That's what's up. Definitely, on air, we're definitely looking to promote not just our, you know, each other, but, you know, the intent of these individuals that we're putting out here. And most definitely with individuals like Joe Neckbone, Max, Kim, and everybody who's contributed on here, we definitely enjoy, you know, seeing what's happening here. And I wanted to get the final word since we have like 6 minutes and 15 seconds left. Max, what would you like to say in closing?
Please check us out at New Abolitionist Radio at blacktalkradionetwork.com. The archives are available. It's a great place to educate yourself on not only the present but also history and what our projections for the future look like based on the truth and facts. You know, we've done the research. All you got to do is listen. And if you want to join the conversation, you can always call in every Wednesday. And I'll give you the quote that I end every show with. Keep in mind that abolition, the abolition of slavery, is a reason for a revolution so we can finally know peace. Peace. And thank you for having me.
And Max, don't leave so quickly. I have to ask you a question. I'm getting, while we're on the air, I get messages from other people. I have a question for you. I was sent some information that I believe came from your link that's saying what we shouldn't support. So I have a question for you. If we're not supporting a business, how do we not support a business that's on your list that's black owned?
How you mean some of the ones that use prison slave labor?
Like McDonald's, for instance.
Well, a lot of those institutions, those businesses, are things that are vital to certain communities. You know, like some people can't afford to go anywhere but Walmart. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to really tell them at this point. I can say that if you can afford it, don't go. It's really that simple. Use fresh fruits and vegetables. Go to farmers' markets and get the freshest things you can find. Support places that are literally made in America. Don't buy from overseas stuff, because that only helps to reinforce the trade laws that we have now, which are stealing our jobs. So buy from Americans, American-made products, and it really depends on your budget. If you have to do something, I'm not going to hate on you. You know what I mean? Like, we've had
No. You're misunderstanding. I'm saying... if it's black owned. So I know there's franchises and that some, you know, individuals can buy into a franchise and they actually own their own store.
Yes.
That's a franchise store.
Right.
Are you suggesting that if a McDonald's is black owned, we should not be supporting that black owned McDonald's?
Yeah, if it was purple owned, it wouldn't matter. If they're contributing to modern day slavery consciously, then you shouldn't be buying your goods and services from them.
Okay.
It doesn't matter who it is. You know, slavery trumps everything else.
My suggestion to that, and this is Joe Nickborn, is something that my mother used to do in the 60s, you know, because I'm a child of the 60s. She used to have a buying club with her girlfriends, and they would get together and buy things in bulk and just split them between them. So instead of individuals' households buying bread or sugar or flour, you get together and you make a bulk purchase from a company, and there are a number of companies that will sell it to you. And, you know, especially when you talk about bulk, and just split it between them.
Yes. In Paterson, New Jersey, we did a campaign called Keep the Greens Black. And what we did was we helped establish up to over 50 new businesses in the community first, and then we showed them how to recirculate their finances amongst each other by purchasing goods and services from within their own community rather than sending it out, because we were finding that most of the money was immediately going out of the community, you know. And that worked pretty good for quite some time. You know, the whole community just kept buying from each other. And as they made money, they were able to reduce their prices to be even more competitive.
Right.
It was very successful for quite some time until the mayor shut us down.
Hey, Joe, where can they find you?
Me?
I don't know.
Oh, I did too.
That's why I was coming in here. I thought it was in here.
Joe Nickborn is incognito. You know, so they can find me here on Sundays. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what's up. With 2 minutes left, Kim, do you have any final words for everybody?
I had to unmute you guys. No, I just want to thank all the callers for listening and all the callers who called in, and thank Max and Essence and everyone else. And sorry
Chandra.
I got on so late, but... I hope to see you guys next weekend, visually.
Yes, I want to say thank you, too, for allowing me to express these controversial views here on your show. And I'll repeat again, I just wish that more people would consider abolitionism rather than reform, because reform is the equivalent of the 13th Amendment in this day and age. We don't want to make a better, kinder slave system. We want to end it. Looks like we're over.
Sigh. Well, seems like they're hard at work in my 30 seconds. I wanted to thank everybody for chiming into the show. And best believe that we are going to continue to be honest, unedited, unashamed of speaking the truth. And looking forward to next week's show and a few others that are going to be a little controversial. But I'm going to end this on a quote. It is wise to direct your anger towards problems, not people. To focus your energies on answers, not excuses. That's by William Ward. So, on behalf of the Queens West Show, I'll call back at y'all.